Alongside Joe Giglio, I'm Joe Ovius. We got game three tonight between the Carolina Hurricanes and the Boston Bruins. At what age should you run a marathon? Plus some NBA updates. Let's log on to the internet, shall we? What's Trending brought to you by Geico. You got a choice of ways that you can save on car insurance. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Go online to geico.com or stop by the Geico office nearest you. Let's get it.
Number five.
All right, try to follow me on this, Joe.
Okay.
The golfers are golfing this week in Potomac, Maryland. They're supposed to be in Charlotte. This is the Wells Fargo tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Sergio Garcia was playing in Potomac yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Lost the ball, went looking for it, gets put on the clock by a PGA official, and then makes these comments while he's looking for his lost ball.
He wasn't happy.
When I got through here and everything.
Yeah, when you got into here and started searching.
You wanted to swim through the river. I mean, I wasn't looking for the ball there. I was looking for the ball once I got over this side. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, I knew it was on this side of the river.
Okay, I mean, I started the clock when you got over in the hill. So, I mean, if you said you weren't searching for it, you were trying to get to the other side, then that's different.
So, you said, took too long. Can't wait to leave this tour.
I can't wait to leave this tour, is what I'm saying.
Can't wait to get out of here. So, he's off looking for his ball and everything else. So, this is now another high-profile golfer that looks poised to leave for this Saudi-backed live tour, whatever they're calling it.
Yeah.
We know that Phil Mickelson is giving serious consideration to going if he hasn't already committed to doing it. I mean, given the money he apparently needs for his gambling losses, it would make a lot of sense that he actually is taking this guaranteed cash and only having to play, what, three rounds?
So it's called LIV, which is the Roman numerals for the number 54.
Oh, so it's not
It's not Club LIV. It's not live at Club LIV.
We're not at the Fountain Blue, and it's not some sort of...
I don't get a discount because the bottles are coming like a giveaway.
It's not a... It's not some sort of over-the-counter medicine that's going to be advertised? No?
Well, there's probably going to be plenty of that.
Sure there is. So Phil's going to be living for this tour, and I guess Sergio Garcia is going to be leaving for this tour. What is Sergio Garcia's lifetime earnings on the PGA?
$54 million.
Okay.
What
am I missing here? Phil's made boatloads of cash, has lost boatloads of cash too, but he's made boatloads of cash off the PGA Tour. What am I missing here? In one sense, I get where Phil's coming from. From his perspective, he's looking at it from monetization of himself. Phil hasn't said it outright, but apparently, behind the scenes, he has complained about the PGA Tour's efforts to monetize things that he feels he should have more of a right to.
Like his shots, his memorable shots.
His memorable shots. He wants to sell those as NFTs because, you know, if a guy who gambles, what's the next logical step? NFTs, right? I don't get Sergio's perspective. What? You could just do whatever the hell you want on this LIV tour? You're not going to get clocked? I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't either, because they're saying if you participate in the Greg Norman tour, basically, the LIV tour, that you won't be able to play in the Ryder Cup, which Sergio, short of winning the Masters, which he did, I think, 3 years ago now, I mean, short of that, his biggest moments have come at the Ryder Cup. So I don't get... his motivation, other than money here. I don't get his motivation.
Yeah, I guess he's
making money, plenty of money. And the thing about Phil from last year, too, you got to remember, he won the PGA Championship last year, Phil Mickelson. So that basically punched his ticket to a bunch of events for this PGA Tour season, which he hasn't played in any since the Farmers. Because of his own reasons. But it's also, he needed this other tour last year. Because he had run out of exemptions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he had been playing on the senior PGA Tour, and he had won three of his four starts, I believe, or even three of his three starts Champions Tour.
Champions Tour.
Because he's over 50.
Yeah.
But what Greg Norman's basically doing is they're going to have a smaller field, which is 48 players, and they're going to have only three rounds, and it's guaranteed money. There's also $20 million in the purse. And they're also going to have team events by the end of the, I think it's an 8 event tour. And the first event's in London in 2 months. I mean, I don't knock Greg Norman's hustle. I don't knock Phil Mickelson's hustle. I don't quite understand Sergio's part of this because his tour standing is fine.
It's fine. And he's at, what, 42 years old?
Yeah. I mean,
so, and he's not, look, he's not old enough for the Champions Tour, obviously, but he's
also. He won twice on the tour last year.
Yeah, and I don't know. There's something that I'm at a loss to figure out with Sergio and Phil and this LIV Tour and the angst with the PGA Tour. Is it that you get to a particular place in your career where you feel like you shouldn't be told anything?
I guess.
And
I don't know enough. I'm not in the weeds enough to know.
That's
that.
Right. And I'm not in the weeds knowing enough about Sergio Garcia or Phil Mickelson. I could see Phil Mickelson. I think I know enough about Phil.
Phil's a big enough personality
where he's like, you can't tell me what to do. Sergio, like.
Well, Phil's almost like a college athlete, right? He's sitting here going, I'm generating all this for you. What are you?
Yes.
At that point in his career where he wasn't winning enough, Joe, and he didn't have the exemptions. That's what I'm saying. Before the PGA Championship, that was an issue for him. I could see him taking the opportunity. But since winning the PGA, I can't quite figure out
next up
where he's coming from.
Number four.
Have you run a marathon?
I did.
How old were you when you ran a marathon?
I was 25.
Okay. When you were 6 years old, were you thinking about running a marathon? I certainly wasn't. 6 years old, I was just more concerned with getting my Capri Sun after a soccer match. There was some hubbub over a Cincinnati marathon that allowed a 6-year-old boy to participate in the 26.2-mile event. Iris Simpson Bush, the executive director for the Flying Pig Marathon, released a statement here in the Washington Post. I assume full responsibility for the decision and accept that it was not the best course of action. Added that going forward, the age minimum of 18 for the full marathon will be strictly observed. Policies are also requiring a minimum age of 14 on race day for the half marathon and 12 for the 10K event. This statement was shared on Sunday after the participation of the 6-year-old got on social media. Apparently, the 6-year-old is part of a family of runners that likes to do things for clout on social media. And then the reason why it got picked up is because the father of the 6-year-old got on social media to say that, oh, well, you know what? He's struggling right now to finish, and we're going to make this work. The reason why it got huge was because two-time Olympic distance runner Kara Goucher tweeted Wednesday, I'm not questioning motivation or saying it's bad parenting, but as an Olympic athlete, I promise you this is not good for the child. And the father went on social media to say, hey, look, I gave my 6-year-old the option of participating in the marathon and not being forced to do so. He was begging to run this year, adding that he and his wife gave him a 50-50 chance of completing it and were ready to pull the plug at any moment if he requested it or if we viewed it as a safety risk, end quote. You could tell a 6-year-old no. This just in. I'm just saying. You can tell the 6-year-old no.
What'd they run it in?
Oh, I didn't say. I didn't say what he ran it in. He apparently had to stop.
Six is kindergarten.
Yeah. Like my kid just did the fun run at school. Like that's enough.
Apparently he had to stop. Yeah, if a 6-year-old can run 26 miles, I mean, come on.
With those little legs, man? Come on. There's no way. Again, my bigger issue is my 6-year-old was begging me to do that. Cool. When my kids were six, they were begging for all sorts of stuff.
My 14-year-old wants to drop out of eighth grade. I mean, should I let him? I mean,
he's begging for it.
At some point,
you
got to be.
He's begging you,
right?
He's begging you. Yes. My son was begging me to go to a concert. I told him, "Well, here's what you're gonna have to do to go to a concert. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen." Oh, but he begged me to do it. I just couldn't say no. Come on, guys.
I feel like my mom right now. If the other kids jumped off the George Washington Bridge, would you? Okay, sure, I won't.
Next up.
You're right.
Number three.
So Joel Embiid has been cleared to play tonight, Joe.
Doesn't matter.
But he's not going.
He's not playing.
No. Philadelphia 76ers won't have Embiid. He is out of the concussion protocol, at least, though, for game three. Sixers back at home tonight, taking on the Heat. Let's see if they're favored, because this would be the same They're not.
They're not favored?
No.
Okay.
Miami, well, Embiid kind of probably skewing that. But Sixers down 2-0, hosting the Heat tonight. The Heat are the one-point favorite in that game, but they will not have Embiid. That series is already over. Out west, the Suns and Mavericks head to Dallas, where the Suns have a 2-0 series lead as well.
Next up.
Number two.
So the situation between the Cleveland Browns and Baker Mayfield apparently has gotten worse since the draft.
How?
This is my shock face.
How?
Well, they couldn't get rid of him. And then now, according to ESPN, there's all sorts of issues behind the scenes that are coming to the surface. There is some talk that Baker Mayfield might want to reduce his guaranteed money so he can actually secure a full-on release from the Cleveland Browns. This was floated by Mike Florio of ProFootballTalk.com. The Browns hold his rights for 2022. He holds a ticket to an $18.8 million in guaranteed pay. The Browns have nothing to lose by waiting. Mayfield has nothing to gain by delaying the inevitable. So he floats the idea that the Browns should do to Baker Mayfield what they did with Odell Beckham Jr. when they reached this agreement back in November. Mayfield reduces his guaranteed pay, and then the Browns go ahead and let him go. But back to that Jake Trotter part, you know, we wondered out loud when there was a conversation about the Carolina Panthers and Baker Mayfield and how good of a locker room presence was he. And I think it's still fair to point out that a change of scenery can do people good. And the Browns, as an organization, to me, never really get the benefit of the doubt given how they're run, how many coaches they've gone through, and how many mistakes they've made. Like, I don't know why the Browns immediately get given this carte blanche to be, oh, man, they just do things right. It's a great organization. No, they're constantly in a state of trying to get things right. So in this article that was on ESPN.com, there was an unnamed starter making the following comment when asked if he had seen the video posted by Beckham's OBJ's father. Remember, OBJ's father got in the middle of it, was calling Baker Mayfield out and things like that.
Showing routes when he was open, when he missed him.
Quote, this is from an unnamed starter to ESPN. Quote, why would I watch the video? I see it every day in practice. ESPN also reported that multiple sources close to Mayfield wondered whether the team specifically tried to make him look as hapless as possible in the Monday night finale in Pittsburgh in order to make it easier to move on from Mayfield after the season. The Browns declined to provide a comment to ESPN as to those suspicions. So it's gotten that bad in Cleveland between Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns. I'm shocked that there was no solution that came out in the draft. I'm shocked that this thing is still going on right now. I don't know what the Browns have to gain by constantly throwing Baker Mayfield under the bus. It's almost like they might have shot his trade value.
I was going to say, why are you shocked? Because what leverage do they have at this point?
They don't.
Everyone knows the only thing they can do is, as you mentioned, do what they did with Beckham Jr., release him, and then find value that way. The Browns painted themselves into this corner, and they're the only one. So you shouldn't be shocked. As you said, this is a franchise that doesn't know what they're doing and hasn't known what they're doing. And they've misplayed this. And now they'll lose the first overall pick in the draft from just 4 years ago, right? And have nothing in return for it. Like you, and he's not a terrible player.
No, he's not.
But this also goes to show that his locker room presence is a deterrent. His salary is a deterrent because I think his play, if you go back to the pandemic year, is above average in the NFL.
I think the salary.
I don't think it's great, but I think when he's healthy, he's one of the 12 best quarterbacks in the NFL.
I think the salary is more of a deterrent at this point than the personality.
I disagree because $19 million is not a lot if you're going to have him as your starting quarterback.
But
I think the personality is such that if you brought him in with a younger quarterback, like, say, Drew Locke,
sure,
which would be the most logical place right now, do you really want to splinter that and for what return? Same premise for the Panthers. He's better than Sam Darnold, but how much better?
Well, here's the thing. I think the Panthers are a little bit of a different situation. The reason why I think the money is more of a stumbling block to the personality, because I don't pretend to know Baker Mayfield, and I go back to one simple thing. I don't know if I trust an organization that has been, as our listener Patty points out, a factory of sadness for a very long time, okay? When the quarterback market is as settled as it apparently is, bringing on that salary is not exactly something you want to do. And you can use the, well, we heard he's not a great guy, et cetera, to try to lowball the Browns. Again, what we saw in the NFL draft affected Baker Mayfield too. We saw in the NFL draft affected Jimmy Garoppolo as well. I know he's got the shoulder issue just like Baker Mayfield does. So if we understand that Kenny Pickett being the only quarterback to go in the first round was a direct correlation to the quarterback market across the league essentially being settled, then it would absolutely affect Baker Mayfield. If the quarterbacks were not settled, if there was a massive amount of movement, then I bet you would have seen some reaches in the draft, and this Baker Mayfield thing probably would have worked itself out by now. Just my hunch. And I do believe in this. I really do. Organizations and players sometimes need separation.
Yeah.
We see it all the time in hockey, right? It's the classic cliche of a change of scenery. A guy just has kind of hit a wall in a particular organization, and then they move on somewhere else, and they do just fine. Hell, OBJ is an example of this, right? You go to a better organization, and things tend to work out. I'm telling you, Baker Mayfield going to a different organization that isn't as poorly run as the Browns and doesn't have this palace intrigue all the time. I mean, for heaven's sake, Hugh Jackson, their previous coach, couldn't stop leaking information to Mike Silver of the NFL Network.
Right.
So that's how the Browns are run. Who's to say that Baker Mayfield can't, like, I'm sitting here talking about maturity for a guy who should be mature already. My point is, different situation might lend itself to a different Baker Mayfield in the locker room. Next up.
The number one story of the day.
We're number one.
Carolina Hurricanes in action tonight. Game 3, Stanley Cup playoffs round 1 against the Boston Bruins. They're up 2-0 on the Boston Bruins. After game 2 Wednesday night, I was pretty emphatic. I think the series is a wrap. I thought the series was a wrap after game 1. I believe that even more so after game 2, given the way that the Bruins played in that contest. So, the Canes don't seem all that bothered by it, though. They just don't seem bothered by it, and I don't see them being bothered by it tonight either against the Boston Bruins. Couple quick notes, though. Peter Kochetkov is going to start tonight. Antti Raanta's condition is a little bit fluid. He's fine to back up, though, according to Rod Brind'Amour.
He's fine to back up. Could have probably played. I mean, he's a little nicked up. So I think we'll give him another day and then reassess. Unless he convinces me otherwise when I get back in there.
So I think Rod doesn't want to do any more media availabilities. For instance, when he was asked about Kochetkov's first start in the playoffs for the Carolina Hurricanes tonight, he's like, this is the most least important question ever.
It's probably the biggest question that gets asked that has the least importance. Stop fuck. As a player, you don't even worry about who's in your net. You got a job to do, whoever it is. So it's like so irrelevant.
I mean, I get where Rod Brind'Amour is coming from, but I think this follows an overall pattern that we've seen from the head coach where they're not getting too high, they're not getting too low, they play their game, they don't have anything to worry about. They said after game 1, hey, it was an evenly matched game. Not much is learned from this. After game 2, they kept it cool. They were more talking about what happened with Boston and the acts of aggression. And then the same thing is applying tonight. Not getting too hot, not getting too cold. That's Rod's prerogative. That's not mine. I'm here to tell you what I see and not trying to couch it with even keel analysis. Giglio, what I see is a team in Boston that knows they cannot skate with the Canes. So what do? You try to muck it up. Get some retaliation, goad them in some penalties, maybe you get the PK going. Because I know that's the one thing you're worried about tonight.
Yeah, I think that's Boston's only path home.
Yeah.
Right? And I think they can win this series with the rookie goalie. I do think they want to see Freddie Anderson come back, not only for the Rangers, potentially in the next round, but I think Florida will be the team standing, waiting for them in the conference finals. And that's going to be an all-hands-on-deck. That'll be a classic Panthers get up and down the ice, and the Canes are that top defensive team, and you see which one can advance.